Welcome everyone. My name is Katie and I'm from the Kurdistan Solidarity Network. Welcome to our third lessons from Rojava session. This one's focused on the Kurdish women's movement. So a reminder to everyone who has joined or is still trying to join and maybe is looking at Facebook, that you might need to reinstall Zoom to access the meeting properly. I know a few people had difficulties at the beginning, but we are live streaming this on Facebook and we'll be recording it as well. Throughout the session, we just ask if friends could keep their cameras off, just because it might help with the internet connection when we have some videos to play. And then also we want to keep the chat function open. So please do feel free to introduce yourself and where you're dialing in from, and also use the chat to kind of ask us any questions that you might have that come up while people are talking. And we'll hopefully have time to get to some of these at the end, not all of them. We also have friends who are going to try and respond where we can't answer them, like in the full session kind of thing, and just a reminder to keep the chat kind of friendly and comradely, and to use it in a supportive and a nice way with each other. Grand. So I'm going to move my notes slightly more towards me. Before we properly begin the session, I'm sure that a lot of you will be thinking about and following closely what's been happening in the US with the People's Uprising. We had a few things that we wanted to share with you and to sort of say in support and solidarity with friends, but we haven't kind of changed the broader outline of the session that we're doing tonight. There is a statement from the Kurdistan Women's Communities, which is KJK, in solidarity with George Floyd. They released this yesterday, so we're going to post that in the chat, and also some links to solidarity funds for people experiencing the violence of the criminal justice system and incarceration in the United States, and with a particular focus on providing bail for Black mothers. So that will also be in the chat. There's also some links that we recommend friends check out. The Black Socialists of America in particular, they have a lot of solidarity connections with the Kurdish freedom movement. So they've got a good Twitter thread, many that you can check out. And it's a really powerful example of international solidarity at this time. And I think there's also a video of someone speaking at one of the conferences which the women's movement held recently. So please do have a look at those and support those. So I'm going to give a bit of an overview of the women's movement more broadly, and we have some speakers who are joining us from Rojava and elsewhere as well, who are also going to talk about their experiences organizing with the women's movement. I'm gonna speak for about 5 to 10 minutes, just about a kind of a really brief history, I guess, about the what role women have played in the movement and why their role and their leadership is so central and how this came to be. And hopefully our other speakers will expand on some of these points. So one way to understand women's liberation is it being as a quest for freedom, not just a quest for rights or access to certain things. So for the women's movement, defending women's liberation means fighting for a free life for all people at every level of society. women have played a vital role in the Kurdish freedom movement from its early beginnings in the 1960s, and particularly since the uprising that began on the 15th of August in 1984. So the 1980s saw a historic period of resistance by Kurdish activists who were imprisoned in Turkey. And it was women who provided a strength, courage, inspiration during this time. This is women in prison, and all this strength and courage and inspiration persisted and went on to further kind of shape the character of the women's movement, which grew and became established really throughout the whole of the 1990s. In this quest to become established and to assert their leadership and central role in the struggle, the women have faced internal struggles within the movement as well as in the wider framework of patriarchal oppression in society, as many women in leftist movements have before them. So many of the male comrades in the movement, for example, didn't find it acceptable initially for women to be breaking the frameworks and taboos of conservative family relations shaped by the combined forces of religion, colonialism, patriarchy, and capitalism. As these women were sort of flooding to join the struggle and assert their status. So in response to this kind of resistance, I suppose, women have had to be organized. Without this, their efforts would have completely withered away, as we have seen so often happen in revolutionary movements and all kinds of struggles where women have gained a degree of like access or authority that this can wither away. And the key thing to say about autonomous organizing, by which I mean women having independent structures in civil society, political parties, defense units, at every level, having these autonomous structures allows us to develop new mentalities. And this is an insight that will be familiar to a lot of feminist organizers here. Apologies, motorbike outside. The idea that autonomous organizing allows us to develop ourselves and new ways of thinking and being is an insight that a lot of feminists will be familiar with, and everyone, others from marginalized and oppressed groups. So as these autonomous structures and modes and forms of organizing have adapted and developed over the years, so has the strength of the analysis of the women's movement and their ability and confidence to lead. So we see the women's self-defense unit that was set up in the 1990s, for example. This enabled them to assert their presence and leadership in armed struggle, as much as in areas of education and administration. And this really illuminated their potential in a way that it couldn't be denied anymore. In addition to their own autonomous organizing, the leader of the movement, Abdullah Öcalan, has played a really pivotal role in understanding and placing women's labor at the center of his analysis, which has then in turn shaped the ideological positioning of women's revolution being at the center of the Kurdish freedom movement. So this has also been really key. In the late 1990s, this all culminated in the formation of a women's party and also the women's liberation ideology, in which the concept of freedom and what it means to be free was really expanded and took on new meaning and new depth. So in the ideology, which is written down and where these ideas are developed, and we will share some links where you can have a read. This includes ideas such as killing the dominant man and the theory of separation. And these are some concepts that may be friends later on in the talk. will address. I should also say that these are ideas that get discussed and explored in depth over days and days of like educations where women are living together and sharing each other's lives and have the ability to kind of really develop in a communal way their understanding of these ideas. And so we are really just scratching the surface today, but hopefully it will give you a sense of some of this deep sort of thinking as well as like how it works in practice. But underneath all of these ideas and the practical principles is the core one, which is that women must organize, educate, live, work, fight, and struggle autonomously in order to develop their own liberatory consciousness away from patriarchal practices and mindsets. And this includes even aspects of the masculine which we formed within ourselves, meaning that self-analysis as well as trust and deep comradeship amongst women is really important so that we can lovingly criticize one another, help each other grow. This is all really essential. So I'm going to finish with a quote from Sakina Janses, who's one of the founders of the Kurdish Women's Liberation Movement. She was assassinated in Paris in 2013. But her words, I think, really sum up the spirit of the women's revolution. So probably no other revolution in history has undergone such long-term, painful, but successful single revolutions within its individuals in this degree. And this is where we find the guarantee for victory. The humanization of socialism, the effort, labor, and patience to concretize it in every living cell is crystallizing in our sublime light. For this reason, our fight is marvelous, attractive, and unifying. I am in love with this fight. So, for the rest of the session, we're going to hear from some women in the movement about some of these ideas, how they work in practice in Rojava and other parts of Kurdistan, and also internationally, and how we might apply some of these to our own organizing here, and obviously in a very different set of contexts, which are huge questions. And this is really going to be a taster, and we hope that it's something we can continue to explore with you of future educations that we run, but also in sessions with your groups if you want to get in touch with us and organize something like this. But for now, I'm going to hand over to Sara, who is an internationalist based at the Andrea Wolf Institute in Rojava. And they are going to tell us a little bit about the Institute over there and the work it carries out, as well as some of their reflections about their experiences with the movement. So I'm hoping, if our internet has allowed it, to be able to hand over to Sara now.
I am here.
Fantastic. Would you like to introduce yourself, Sara? And I don't know if your camera is working or if maybe the connection is better to...
No, I am fine. My connection is a little bit weak, but I think it will be fine, I hope. So thank you very much, Kati, and thank you very much to everybody to give us like the opportunity to be together this night and to speak about the revolution, or the woman revolution of the 21st century that is actually happening here in Rojava, but also all over the world. And so, yes, I am Sara Sterk. Do you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay, nice. So I am from the Andrea Wolf Institute of Genealogy Academy that is based in Rojava. So we are making like a research and education about the topics of women revolution and genealogy, that is, as you know, like the science of the woman that has been developed by the Women Kurdish movement from 2008. And so, Yes, what is very important. So in the Rojava Revolution, the Rojava Revolution is a woman revolution, no? Like the women are in the vanguard. I would like just to take the attention of the friend about the etymology of the word in English. Now we use the word leader, and I was checking and I saw that like in old English, like the etymology of the word is to go before as a guide. No, so sometimes when we think about the leader, we think on a person that is top of everything and it's controlling everything, like with a, like a power relation. But actually, when we speak about a vanguard, a leader, it's the idea that a person that will open the way, no? But open the way for who? Like open the way for the woman, for the society. In the Kurdish language, we will use the same like word, like it's, we can, you can say reber or reveberi also. Like it's like reber, as you know, it's used also to define Abdullah Öcalan as a leader of the Kurdish movement, and so it's the one that it's also before as a guide, no? And the reveberi also, like it's like the question of the organization, that it can be a group or it can be also one person, it doesn't matter, but it's that have the task, the social task, to make a specific work and to enlighten the way making this work. So if we look at the history, like every time the woman has played an important role organizing the society, no? And they were the revolutionary vanguard, no? Since the Neolithic time, we clearly see that the matriarchal culture has been established, and it was a really like revolutionary time where like the society has been built, when a lot of knowledge also has been developed, and it has been like materialized by the culture of the mother goddess in that time. So we see clearly like the role of the woman that were central in the society, and that has been they have been leading the Neolithic revolution. In that moment, like the women, they were so as a whole, as the mother goddess was a whole. So most of the time, the mother goddess, she was the goddess of the fertility, of the health, and of the knowledge, no? And so you clearly see what was the identity of the woman in that time, and how the women were seen. Like they were seen as the creator of everything, no? And they were bringing not just for themselves, of course, but bringing also society in this important like development. So when the patriarchal system was developing, of course, like the dominant mind inside the society, breaking the equality, breaking like the balance inside the nature, the society, and the woman, like the first attacks were against the leadership of the society, which were the women. So how they did it, the first thing is like they began like stealing the woman and social knowledge, and changing and controlling the mentality by changing the mythology. And so in that moment, it's the apparition of male gods, that they were taking the place of the goddesses, and they were creating division and destruction of the woman identity. They were changing the woman identity, and the eyes in which with which like the society will look at the woman, and putting the woman in the second plan. Of course, they were also like stealing the economy, and that was an economy based on communal work and equality, and they were controlling the economy in order to accumulate goods and power. And it's in that moment that the class system has been created, and it was the creation of the state also ongoing by that way. And the third things, in order to understand, like it's also how at the end also the male dominant mentality controls the body of the woman and the existence of the woman physically and mentally, also attacking with violence the woman, and transforming like the sexuality in slavery. It's this moment also like the rape culture, the feminicide also has been developed, and it's the instauration also of the patriarchal family in that moment. So it's very, very important to see how every time, like, why and who in the society is the most attacked by the dominant power, that you will understand who is playing the most important role in this society, you know? So it was clearly the woman in that time. And it's very important also to see that the first time in the human history that the word freedom was used, it was the word amargi. And the word amargi in like old Sumerian language means come back to the mother, to come back to the culture of the mother goddess, to come back to the leadership of the woman. And so when you need a word to define freedom, it's when you lose this freedom. Because if you are living in freedom, you don't need to define it, but you need to define it when you are losing something and you want to coming back to, no? So in that moment, it's also like the beginning of a huge process of resistance by the woman and by all the society. This resistance, we clearly see it in the mythology and in the history. For example, you have the goddess Inanna that were very like fighting in order to keep the knowledge of the society, to fight against like the despotic and hegemonic power. You have, of course, like the Amazon woman during the time of the ancient Greece. And also, for example, in Kurdistan, in the time of Alexander the Great, that Alexander the Great wanted to assimilate like the people living in the mountains, and when he was going in the way of occupying Iran, what was Iran in that time, like he wanted to force a lot of women to marry with his soldiers in order to assimilate them to the culture, to assimilate the society. And the woman in that time, they organized themselves, they married with the man, but during the night, the first night after the marriage, all of them, they kill their husband. So we clearly see every time, like the women were resisting against this patriarchal system and not waiting, no? Like someone else will save them, no? Another thing that is very important, it's like in this resistance of the natural society, the men also has a very, very important role. And so, of course, you add the men that they were totally assimilated by the dominant male mentality, as we can see, for example, in the mythology of Gilgamesh, the figure of Enkidu, that it has been sent by the goddess in order to fight against the tyranny, but he has been assimilated. But other figure, like male figure, like for example Humbaba in this mythology, that was really defending the matriarchal culture and the goddess culture, has been making a huge resistance. Another one was, for example, Prometheus. No, like Prometheus, he was like not accepting the domination of Zeus, and when Zeus stole the fire to the people, so you know, like the symbolic of the fire, no, for the society, for the human society. So when Zeus stole the fire to the society, Prometheus fights against, like create the fire and to give it back to the society. So it's very important that when we speak about woman liberation and woman as a vanguard of the society, that we see also like the role of the man in this resistance, which is also very important also in a socialist way of thinking. It was a lot of resistance, 1,000 years of resistance, but at the end, no, like we all knew that in the step of the religion, so at the end it's one God that totally dominate all the society and all the women, and the woman and society were so totally under like the control of the dominate, like the male nation. But for example, if we take the example of Europe, we can see that until the transition to the capitalist modernity in the countryside, like there were the called pagan religion and communal culture that was continuing existing. And again, no, like the role and the strength and the knowledge of the woman in that time were still central in the society. For that, again, no, like, so who is the most important figure, the leader of the society? It will be the one that you will ask first. And again, like the witch hunt has this aim in that time. So the mass feminicide that has been done during the time of the Inquisition was a cultural and a physical genocide. Like it was like all the extermination of a culture, of the statue of the woman in the society, in order to, of course, dominate more the society. So if you want to dominate a society, you have to dominate the woman of this society. So of course, it has been like a huge, huge catastrophe that we live, not just as women, but as all the people in Europe in that time, because it was the extermination of the wise woman, so of the knowledge. It was the extermination of the spirituality, the link between woman, nature, and society, the communal culture, etc. No? And like it was in that moment that the imperial and dominant mind and the dogmatic patriarchy that before could not be totally established in the society that has been like imposed. So it was the same, for example, with the colonization of the world, and mostly we can see it in the time of the colonization of America, where 90% of the indigenous people has been exterminated by the colonization. Again, like it's very important to say that in before the arriving of the colonization, like again, most of the societies that were living there, they were matriarchal society, or the status of the woman was very, very important, and the knowledge and like in Europe in that time. So it's very, very important to see how also like all the atrocities that has been done on the indigenous woman and also on the slave woman that has been bring from Africa, where also there were a lot where a lot of people were still like matriarchal system. So all of we also see that, of course, there were a lot of resistance from the woman in that time. And we see it clearly. I will give an example. It's, for example, when the colonizers, they arrived to America, and so they were colonizing, of course, they faced a lot of resistance from the people in this place, and mostly from the woman. And so, you know, like the Amazon, like the river and the like forest of Amazon has been named like this by the colonizers, because when they arrived, they faced women warriors that they were fighting against them. And we can clearly see that if they gave the name of this woman in that time, it's because the resistance was very, very huge. So again, like you see that how the women, they were also like the vanguard of the defense of the land, the defense of the culture against the colonization and against the patriarchal mind that were arriving with the colonizer also in that moment. You know, and one of the projects in that moment, it was to make a change in the local society in order to bring the men also of the society against the women or of their own people. Today, we can see, for example, like really this link continuing in all the ecological struggle and the women that they are like struggling for their people, for example, in Latin America, and how these women are also the first target of the state and the groups that are like armed, no? For example, the assassination, no, of Berta Cáceres, or of a lot of women defenders that they fight for human and nature right of life. It's like a daily struggle, no? Again, like after, of course, during all the revolution that has been done from that time against the capitalist modernity, against like the colonization, the woman has been every time in the vanguard of the revolution. But the thing is like, maybe they were not recognized or accept because of it, but they were. For example, in the French Revolution, the declaration of the right of the men and citizens, and the, when the king has been put under control of the Paris people, it was because of the woman march of the 9th of October of the 1789. During the Paris Commune, also in the 1871, like the Paris Commune by itself starts with an action of the woman in Montmartre. And so we see clearly, like, again, like the vanguard role of the woman, and not just of this, like thousands of women, they were fighting in the barricades, but and until the end, and even they didn't have the right of vote or to be elected, but they had the, a lot of autonomous organization in that time, and a lot of laws, or like decrees, we say, has been done because of their influence. And a lot of them was in favor the woman, no? And again, like the Russian Revolution starts with a huge woman protest of the 8th of March of 1917. Like the Spanish Revolution is remembered by everybody because of the this beautiful picture of all the women in the barricades. In Yugoslavia against the fascism during the Second World War, there were 2 million women that they were organized in the anti-fascist women's front. And 100,000 women were organized in the National Liberation Army. 2,000 female commanders were in that time, and 25,000 women partisans became martyrs in that time. Of course, like in all the anti-colonial struggle or anti-capitalist guerrillas, so in Algeria, Vietnam, Palestine, Cuba, the Philippines, the Burkina Faso, the role of the woman was very, very important. Of course, and the last example was the Zapatist movement and the role of Comandante Ramona and all the Zapatist women that they were really the vanguard in order to organize all the society and also keeping part in the armed struggle. So when we speak about the vanguard role of the Kurdish woman in the Kurdistan revolution, it's like that the comrades, they see themselves as the continuity of the struggle of all the all this woman and all the history, you know? We don't cut and we don't make the division that the system and the state want to make us. And so the thing is like when you think about the freedom, you don't think for the freedom for one woman, or for one, the woman of one people, but you think about the struggle for all the women. And yeah, the one of the critique that the Kurdish movement and Abdullah Öcalan made also to all the like socialist movement of the past, or all the movement that they were fighting for the democracy and for the like freedom, is like, at the end, like because of the state and patriarchal mentality, like all this movement didn't accept or didn't recognize the vanguard role of the woman in the society and in the revolution. And also after the revolution, when the revolution was done, they pushed the woman to come back to their traditional roles in the family. And so even your male comrade, no? Sometimes, and like, we're just telling you, okay, you can go until a step, but not to change everything in the society, no? And so it has been like the like motive, like the it's because of that that the revolution could not be. So if we want to reach the revolution, we have to accept like the role of the woman in the revolution. Why? Because in like every time, in every place, every social class, every nation in the world and in the history, there is a woman that is struggling against the male dominant mentality. So it's the base of the struggle for freedom is the woman. It's not just because the women are half part of the humanity, but because they are everywhere struggling. So they are like there was the first revolutionary vanguard of the history. And at the same time, they were the one that first received violence from the oppressive system and the first to struggle against it, no? And so like what we are doing now, it's like 5,000 years after, the women are taking again the revolutionary vanguard openly in order to defeat the oppressive system and in order to unite the society again, which is like we don't disconnect like the woman or the gender struggle, all the other struggle, the ecological struggle, the class struggle, the anti-colonial struggle. And so it's very, very important. And so the unity of the woman can be the beginning of the unity of all the society. And so from the beginning, no, like Abdullah Öcalan met this analyze when he was building the Kurdish movement, no, and the PKK organization. And so from the beginning with the first woman that they participate to this revolutionary project as a Sakine Jansis, Abdullah Öcalan and all the Kurdish movement were putting a lot of effort in the organization and development of the women's freedom movement inside the party, but also inside the society, you know? Because it's like, again, like if you want to make a social revolution, this revolution has to be done by and for the society and not by a group of people. It has been like this struggle that has been like based on the role and the identity of the woman inside the natural society, no? So woman saw as a whole as a strength for the society and as a leadership also. The thing is like also that the woman didn't want just to fight the oppressor or the state, but they wanted to change the system and the mentality of the society in order to build a new life, no? And so it's like kind of change of 5,000 years of paradigm of oppression, no? And we call it like this revolution is the second woman revolution after the Neolithic revolution. So that it will give a new step in the society, a new world that that we can build together, but not a new world that we forget what happened before, but just like we take a revenge and we take it as a model, as inspiration in order to build our new society. So the first step of it is the self-defense. Because where there is an army that everywhere in the world or forces that are attacking the woman, that are patriarchal armies or violence against the woman, like you have to have a woman's army for freedom. You have to have a woman's group of physical defense and also like a defense of the woman in all the society. For that also, it cannot just stay in the hand of the like self-defense in just a physical way, but you have also to organize all the structure, all the social structure of the woman in order to protect all the fields of the life, like language, culture, education, health, medias, etc. So in order to, when you want to organize something, you need like an ideology. You need to have values. You need to have a roadmap. You need to have a clear aims. No, so it's what like the revolution of Rojava also it's following now. So it's like the ideology. So what you need is an ideology of woman liberation, which is the liberation of the society. Now I am taking a lot of time. I will try to finish as soon as possible, but just so. What are these base of the ideology of the freedom? The first point is the, like we call it in Kurdish, velat parezi, which means like the protection of the land. So the women have to be the vanguard, and it's exactly what they are today in Rojava when they are fighting against Daesh, when they are fighting against like the Turkish occupation, or against all the intent of the hegemonical power to also destroy the women revolution and the people revolution in the north and eastern Syria. So the women are building their own woman popular army. They are building all the structure of the society in order to defend the culture, to defend their origin, but not just, for example, in the case of the Kurdish woman, it's like totally not in a nationalistic way, but it's also like each woman, each people in this land has to have the right to speak their own language, to continue their own culture, and to defend together, all together, the same land where they can live together, no? So this like revolution of protecting the land, it's not just for one people, it's not just something that it's bringing sectarism, but it's something that is bringing diversity. Another point is the organization and the struggle. So every woman has to be organized, and the gender struggle and the struggle for freedom has to be done everywhere, from the mountain to each houses, from Kurdistan to each country. So if in Rojava, you will ask to our female friends, and they will tell you, we will never stop our struggle until all the women in this world will be free, because the freedom of one woman, it's not freedom. It has to be a freedom that we can share together. If there is a woman in some places that is crying, that is facing violence, it's all the women that are facing violence. So when you create also this empathy between women, and we organize all together from the very local level, but also coordinating this struggle in an umbrella, like with an umbrella, no? Like, for example, we see the KJK for Kurdistan, but we can imagine that, or for example, Kongrastar, no? In Rojava, we can imagine an umbrella that can be in a worldwide frame also, no? Because, like, if you have a look now, the attacks on women, we can see, for example, what happened with Daesh, no? For example, like, it was very clear, like Daesh was directly attacking the woman leadership in Kurdistan and in Middle East in general. Like, like we can see also, for example, not just the atomic bomb now, but also like the biological weapons, like a virus, for example, in 1 week, you can attack all the world at the same time, no? And we know also how much the women, they suffered because of the quarantine or because of the effect of the spreading of the coronavirus in that moment. And so we, our answer and the life that we want to build cannot be just made in a local level, but it has been coordinated in a global way. So this is, of course, like Rojava, it's a prototype of it, no? All the women, like Kurdish women, Arab women, like Assyrian women from all the culture, from all the religion, that they are building now their common umbrella, their common organization through the ideas of the woman liberation. It's making a step that we can after implant everywhere and to unite. But what is very important, it's like, we have to coordinate all the work, and we have to coordinate it in all the fields of the life, not just, for example, not just in the health system, or not just in the armed struggle, or not just in the in the education. We have to be everywhere, organize a new system that will change the mentality. And so in that way, what is very important is to create a free will of the woman, like independent of the will of the state, of the will and the thought of the dominant male. And so in Rojava, what it's organizing by creating the autonomous structure of the woman is to create this will. But also after Besime, she will speak about the system of co-chair, that the women, they have a double task in that, also in that revolution. The first one is to be to construct their own their own structure, their own system, in order to bring a new perspective to the society, but also to organize the whole society. So they are present in the both. Again, like we can say that the women, we have like a double task. Every time women that they are carrying on the main difficulties or the main task, but we can ask who can do it if it's not the woman. Like we saw in the past that it cannot be led by men, that they have more possibilities also to fall in the trap of the patriarchal system. So we as women, we have to do it, but it cannot be complete without the participation, the active participation in the change of mentality and in the organization of a democratic, ecological and gender freedom life, if it's not done also with like the comradeship and the alliance with the men and the young people and all the components of the society. So what it's also very important when we speak about the freedom and the liberation of women, it's like we have to speak about the transformation of the man and the transformation of the man, like the dominant male mentality. And so this project, of course, the woman, we are the vanguard, and in Rojava, the women are clearly the vanguard of that, but also this project has to be carried on by the men, by themselves also. So for a socialist revolution, for a socialist society, democratic society, all the components of the society have to carry on and to go to take the same way of the woman, that they are the vanguard. I'm sorry for the time. I think it was a little bit long.
No, that's great. Thank you so much, Sara. That's really, really, lots of ideas, lots of, a lot. It made me think of a lot, and there are some questions in the chat that have come up. So please do keep sending those in. We'll try and address some of them at the end. And also, if there are any clarifications about terms or things like this, we can also try and answer them. It's a very movement, like rich in ideas, and you covered a lot, so thank you. We're next going to hear from Besame, who is the co-chair of the Women's Diplomacy Committee in Europe. And she's actually sent us a recording, and we'd love to play it. However, it's in Turkish, so we have Hazel, who is going to read English translation over the top. But hopefully you can see Besame.
Uzanın seçer mehne en behavra amu cihan koronavirüs dağıttı. Herkes eklimale.
As you know, for 3 or 4 months, the whole world has been talking about coronavirus. Everyone's in the house, but I wanted to give the seminar from outside, from the garden. We can breathe a bit more freely here. Everyone is inside all the time, maybe listening from a study, but I wanted to be out with a big tree behind me so I can talk to you with hope and love for nature. Our topic is women, the Kurdish women's movement, and how it organizes itself. What meaning does autonomous women's organizing and the co-chair system have for the Kurdish movement and the Kurdish people? As the Kurdish women's movement, our paradigm for the 21st century is to reevaluate life and society based on ecology, democracy, and women's freedom. This is our paradigm and our slogan, ecological, democratic, and in search of women's freedom. It has become clear through the situation with Corona that capitalist modernity is not a system we can rely on for the future. It will not fulfill our hopes or bring us what we want. It has become clear that the state is a danger to nature, that the politics of the dominant hegemonic male cannot provide security and health or anything else for women, youth, or society. Or for a future for our children. This system of the state and of the current state of politics does not protect us. It does nothing for the security of the people. The paradigm of oppression, the dominant male, and capitalist modernity has been exposed. In these last months, during the time of Corona, it has become clear from everything that's going on with health, medicine, in hospitals, and in life, that the state is not ready to deal with this kind of catastrophe that confronts us, to solve problems of health and nature. Not in Europe, North America, the Middle East, anywhere. So in this time, everyone has seen that we need to stick together as a society, since the system has turned its back and betrayed trust. And it has turned out that the solution in this time of pandemic is once again in the work that women do, working in hospitals, working to keep the economy afloat, working in the home, even more when everyone is staying at home, and the sacrifices made caring for the sick and how much work women have done to give morale all over Europe, America, England. And from staying in the home, women have faced the most violence. There's been attacks on women. Femicide and gendered violence have increased. Truly, we've seen that 2019 was the year of women, from Latin America, Chile, to Iran, to Pakistan, to Sudan, to Turkey, to Kurdistan, Rojava, and across Europe, in Spain, Portugal, all over. In many different places in 2019, women said, "We will no longer accept male domination." And with our organizations or autonomous system, we also say that we do not accept this system. The system that is fundamentally against women, ideologically, politically, in economy, in health, in security. Women can have no hope in a system that is so completely against them. We cannot expect the capitalist system or the state to give us our rights. We have no faith in the state. We have no faith in the patriarchal political system. Not as women, not as people who want freedom, who value thought, not to make a democratic society, a good politics, or a free life. So we have no faith in the system. As the Kurdish women's movement, when we talk about a democratic system led by the vanguard of women's liberation, it's because we want to change the system. We don't want to reform the system. We want to transform it from the base. If we don't change it from the base, the system won't change at all. It's still the same system, just using different words. They say colonialism is over, but now neoliberalism and the free market are occupying us, making war in the Middle East. They say they're fighting terrorism, but it's the opposite. So as the autonomous women's movement, we say that we need to reevaluate and redefine with women's consciousness and perspective all the arguments and language the system uses against us, ideologically, in political terminology, economic terminology. What does women's perspective mean? It means thinking in terms of society and community. It means taking nature into account, appreciating and honoring nature and society. It means instead of acting in ways that oppress others, asking what is in the interest of society? What is good for people, for health, for spirit, for consciousness? What does communality mean? What is solidarity? What is what we want to live with our system? And so that we can work on this, it's necessary to break with the capitalist system and paradigm, get some distance, and look at all these things that we've learned, that we've stored in our minds and bodies, from the system, from education, from all schools and universities, from the media, social media, TV, everything, that until today we're still taking in, and reevaluate them. Question and critique them. It's necessary to get away from them. If we don't break from the system as it is, if we carry on using their language and their definitions, women's autonomy and freedom will not develop. So we need to develop a system ourselves as women. As women, we need to sit together and discuss, evaluate, give perspective. We need to redefine all these words as they're used today. Society, person, system, politics, economy, science, wisdom, belief, religion. Give them a new meaning with the consciousness of freedom. This is women's autonomy in political parties, in municipalities, in parliament politics, in culture itself, in economy, in the system of democratic confederalism. We make our work separately. The biggest example of this has come about in Rojava. On the side of self-defense, women are organized completely independently. In the political area, women are self-organized and they are building up their own communes. Women can build up their own lives, even villages, separate from men, and live differently. In economy, women are also making their independence, building up their own cooperatives. Against the system of knowledge and science of capitalism and the dominant male, women are building up their own academies to discuss and develop knowledge, as the genealogy academies. A lot of work has also been going on for years in Baku, Turkish-occupied Kurdistan. It's progressed into very difficult circumstances. Men never want women to become organized for themselves, to speak their minds, to critique men or to critique the system or the politics that men have brought about. Against everything we resisted, we critiqued men's anti-democratic approaches, we critiqued a dominant male mindset, we critiqued the Turkish state's fascist politics. We built up women's councils for all ages and types of women, young, old, workers, housewives, everyone. Everyone who wants freedom, who wants to work for ourselves and organize and be political for ourselves can join in and express herself in the autonomous structures in self-defense, research and reflection, politics, health, and the co-chair system, which comes from the women's movement. We're organized in different areas. Whether it's culture, diplomacy, politics, health, economy, women are self-organized. For the last 5,000 years, men have dominated politics. The language of politics is the language of men. In parliaments or municipalities, as ministers and presidents in all areas, all with the language and approach of male oppression. Men have made life dangerous and toxic and damaged society. Militarism, racism, and savagery have progressed. With weapons and war, occupation, and industrialism, the dominant male has enforced injustice. And so that we can change this male-dominated politics of oppression for the future, as women, we have built our autonomous structures. Partly, we work with men so that we can change male-dominated politics in parliament, politics, and councils. On the other hand, we work independently as women. Most of all, women have to organize fully for ourselves. Sometimes men are creating obstacles and problems so that women cannot develop autonomously. There's an attempt to remove that obstacle. The co-chair system is a mechanism of control so that men don't take over with the politics and language of the dominant male. The co-chair system means political duties are shared. Nothing is just decided with the perspective of the dominant male. Every decision is shared. It includes the perspective of women. When we developed the co-chair system, we wanted to stop it from only being men who impact society. We wanted women to reach society, for society to draw strength from women and learn from women what democratic politics means, what the politics of human communality is, what's the best thing for society, for women, children, nature. Because when women don't join discussions, when women don't set the terms, men don't take nature or life into account in political decisions and laws. For example, this park in which we're sitting, women see it as an important place to bring children, draw breath, sit and be close to nature. The male mentality sees it as an opportunity for profit. It needs a cafe or a bar, something that uses nature for money and profit in the manner of industrialism. It can be a park or a city. For engineers with this mindset, always the focus is building the biggest things for the most profit. But the woman's perspective asks, how can we make people's lives better? How can this market, the city, make people's lives easier? So we want to bring about a politics based in society, a natural politics at this kind of level. And if women don't get involved in politics, men aren't going to step away from politics themselves. Men are not going to say, I've been getting politics and economy wrong. My knowledge is wrong. Let women come and make politics. Not only in 5,000 years of patriarchy or 200 years of capitalist modernity has someone said something like this. So it's necessary we don't wait for men. We need to go ourselves and say, we're women and we're half the world. If we are half the world, we need to work at the same level, bring the consciousness of women to the system of capitalist modernity, to the system of male oppression. We take responsibility for the world, we forge a connection with nature and with society, and the system of male oppression. The rapist is you. This slogan went all around the world. It was for women all over the world. It gave an answer to all the capitalists and groups of powerful men in the world. And the Kurdish women's movement, in order to progress our paradigm of ecology, democracy, and women's freedom, we say if women have been oppressed, then we need to become free of that oppression. If society has developed under the ruling class of the dominant male, it's necessary for women to break free of all oppression. And thanks to the efforts of Kurdish women in Baku and in Rojava, the Rojava revolution has become an international revolution. Women and societies all over the world have been following or have taken their place alongside. If women can be victorious against ISIS, against Turkish state, AKP fascism, the politics of Erdogan, if our systems of freedom and democracy can resist, if we can bring about the paradigm of the 21st century, the century of women, ecological, democratic, based on women's freedom, in Rojava and all over the world, then we can get through these days and the danger of Corona. And I believe that someday soon we can sit together face to face and properly evaluate and discuss everything. Women's freedom, autonomous organizing, the co-chair system. So I don't know if this lived up to what you hoped. Maybe you have questions and so on. Maybe you see things differently. So I hope we can talk again another day.
عجبان بهفرا جدا جدا بنرخنن أبارك ما مبي روجي كديم بكن جن جيان أزادي سركفتن هير بجي
Thanks very much, Hazel, and to Besame. It was really lovely to hear from you. Okay, so I think there's one more person that I'm going to introduce, but they're going to join us in conversation. So hopefully the next section will be a bit more discursive and we'll have a chance to address some of the questions that people have been sending in. So joining us, as well as Sara, is Berivan, who is another internationalist doing genealogy work in Rojava. And although they are dialing in from somewhere else, not the Andrea Wolf Institute, I think they are technically a part of the institute still. So Berivan, maybe if I can ask you to introduce yourself for the friends on the call, first of all, and also, yeah, just kind of ask for your reflections maybe on some of what you've heard, both Sara and Besame talk about that particularly stood out for you. Do we have Berivan? Have we lost Berivan? Oh gosh. okay, in which case, perhaps I will perhaps Vian, who is another internationalist who is also thankfully able to join us. We did expect that we might have some connection problems. So apologies for that, everyone. Have we also lost Sara? No, we have Sara still. So okay, this is good. We can Vian, maybe if you would like to introduce yourself and share some reflections with the friends, that would be great.
Sure, fantastic. And I'm happy that we anticipated the internet in Rojava cutting out so I could contribute. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. So my name is Vian. I've contributed to some of these seminars before. I am an internationalist based in the UK, and I have fairly recently come back from a year in Rojava doing education, ecological works, and press and media work during the Turkish invasion. And during that time, I was lucky enough to spend some time at Andrea Wolf Institute and also living with and learning from a lot of the amazing women revolutionaries in Rojava. So I suppose to offer some reflections on the seminar so far, as well as drawing lessons from the time I spent there. One thing that I'd have to say really struck me, and maybe some of you listening at home for the first time will realize, that the Kurdish women's movement is very historically located, that we don't have such a long historical memory, political memory, in UK feminist movement, at least none of the groups that I've been involved in. And I think that even though for me it was difficult to engage with it first, it really grew on me because it gives me the sense and the reality of being part of a long history of resistance and seeing myself in that heritage. And I think it really struck me that in the UK, however aware sort of intellectually we are of gender oppression and exploitation and inequality, we don't actually place issues of gender at the center of our activism. And we don't have the commitment to make these concrete transfers of power to women and people who don't experience gender privilege. So that means the political transfers of power, of setting up the autonomous women's structures, the way that the Kurdish women's movement has this autonomous, very powerful political structure. It means economic power, for example, the Aburiya Jin, the women's economy sort of department that funds specifically projects to support women economically and economically empower women. And also the ideological transfer of power to actually say explicitly. And before I went to Rojava, I certainly wasn't comfortable with a term like vanguard because my experiences of it in the UK were very negative. But to actually say women, all women in society hold this ability to be vanguard, to be leaders in them, because they have lived in a way which is counter to the dominant frameworks of patriarchy, capitalism, state fascism, that women hold the ideological keys to our liberation, not just kind of a token sort of discussion group or like kind of autonomous wing or so on. So that was something that really struck me. And I guess I would ask Heval Sada, what are the kind of like lessons that you feel that you've drawn as an internationalist from the Kurdish women's movement and how we can apply it to movements in Europe and the UK?
Sara, can you hear us okay?
Yes, sorry, it was a little bit cut. I didn't understand the last part.
Well, I guess it was just my question to you to kind of like stimulate discussion and to provide some reflections before we move on to questions of what do you think are the key lessons that as internationalists, as people who are more familiar with the movements and political scene in Europe, the UK, America, what lessons can we learn from the Kurdish women's movement?
I think what we can really learn from the Kurdish woman movement and also like all the organization of the women's not here in North and Eastern Syria, because now this revolution, no, it's not just the Kurdish woman, but all the women in the territory, to be as social as possible, no, like to make everything like the theory and the practice together, and to go on in the experimentation, in doing things and thinking things at the same time. And so not doing it from a point of view that sometimes, no, like as leftist militants sometimes, or people that maybe have more access to knowledge to other, or women that has more access to knowledge than other, than they are taking, like carrying on kind of a role of that you have to teach to the society, or you have to build something for the society. But here it's not going like this. It's like you build it with all the women, like all together. And every woman has a kind of knowledge or need or thought. And so you take it as a richness. And so you go on with this. But what is very important also to have is common values. These common values are the base. And it's also the base of what we accept and what we don't accept. Now, in order first, of course, to build a new new society. So which kind of society you want to build, and also in the resistance against like the hegemonic power, the colonization, the occupation, for example, of the Turkish state. So everywhere in the world, I think what it's very, very important, it's like to make clear this base. That what mean a woman revolution, social revolution, what mean freedom, what mean like diversity, for example, the right of life, the right of nature, and etc. I think this is something very important. The other thing also, it's like to adapt every time to each moment and to each places. Now it's like the ideology of the woman liberation and of the democratic nation in Kurdistan, it's not something that is dogmatic. It's not something that you just make some laws or you put some rules that after you just have to impose or like to develop everywhere in the world. No, like you adapt it through the realities, through the conditions, but of course with a different kind of framework, no? Like you have the work, like the political work, that it's something that you need to do in the moment, in the time. So when there is an attack, for example, or when you are building some structure, you will do it through the needs of the moment. But maybe after some time, this structure will not be useful, so you will have to change it, or you understand something new, or you found something new, and so you will develop it in another way. So every time it's something that it's fluid, it's something that is creative, it's something that brings beauty in the life. But at the same time also you have a project that it's a long-term project. No, we will not change like 5,000 years of mentality, of patriarchal state mentality in 2 days. So as a revolution, don't have to be seen that something that it's happening one day. It's a process. It's a long process. And so also what it's important is not to get frustrated in this process, but every time that you feel that your society or what the revolution has been reached, it's maybe stuck or it's not enough on stuff, that you have to be able to make new steps. I think maybe in general in the Western world, sometimes this creativity, this fluidity, we have it a lot in response, like in answer when we receive an attack as women or as society, that we really, I think we very know how the state is working, what are like the aim of the state and stuff like that. But every time we are maybe staying in the reaction, and not in the, like, okay, of course we have to defend ourselves, but we have also to anticipate. And so to anticipate, you need to know how the state is working, what is the history of this system, that how it's organizing. And at the same time, you have to build in parallel to it, like your utopia. Like an utopia, it can be an utopia just if you realize it, no? Like, it's not something just, it's a dream that stay like abstract, but you have to make every, like a new stone in order to build this utopia. It will take time. We will need like, of course, a lot of energy, but I really think that everywhere now in the world, and also of course in Europe, there is a lot of experience that has been made. There is a lot of research made by feminist movement, for example, ecologist movement, anti-capitalist movement, a lot of different projects, a lot of meaning also, that meaning of life, that it's, we are come backing also to kind of what it means life, no? And so all of this now, we have to organize it. We have to coordinate it. We have to make it growing and make it social. So not maybe like just a prototype or an experiment in between some groups or some friends or some political movement or feminist movement, but in order to make it reality with all the women of the society. And I think it's very important. The other thing is like we have to overcome all the divisions. We have to overcome. And it's really what in the Kurdistan and in Rojava, what's now it's the heart of the revolution. It's like to bring unity of the peoples, but through this to making it with the unity of the woman as a base. If the women are united, if they don't accept the division, they don't accept the relation of domination, they don't accept any violence, even if it's a sexist violence, a nationalist or racist violence, like economical violence, all the all kind of violence, we will be like, as women, like really the motor of something for the humanity. But all this
wonderful
division.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So just before we go to questions, because we really do want to make space for questions, which you can Sara further expand on all of this. So just to kind of, draw some of these threads together, I think we see a lot of different things that maybe from the UK we would see as exclusive, but actually are just a very sort of beautiful, chaotic and nuanced way of doing revolution. You know, on the one hand, you have the principles of, the values of democratic confederalism and of the Kurdish freedom movement, which are applied differently in every way. Like Sara was saying, for every place, for every group, you need to adapt it. It won't look the same everywhere. So you have that beautiful diversity, while at the same time having a really strong set of shared values that you define and you defend in a unified way as women. So you kind of have that tension, and then you have the ability to sort of work towards your utopia and fight for your utopia and defend it and creating it through the autonomous women's structures, through the revolutionary movement, while at the same time engaging in very messy politics of day to day, of engaging in the mixed gender structures and really confronting the aspects of patriarchy within your own personality, as well as within those of your male comrades. So you kind of have these really interesting tensions, and which actually complement each other, to let you kind of navigate your path towards like your big long-term vision and looking back towards a really rich history of resistance. So thank you for that. I'll now hand back over to Katie to ask some questions that Sara will answer for us.
Yeah, thank you. So to start with, Sara, we have a question from someone who's asking what the difference is between genealogy and feminism and how you would answer that. Oh, okay. Sorry, you were just muted. So I'm gonna unmute.
Now it's working.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, so like feminism, it's a movement that different waves and different also like movements inside the same movement, no? And as also an history, but like if we look also at all the women. Like there is more women organization than the feminism, no? Or the there is a lot of women that also self-organize and don't define themselves as feminism. This is from one part. And from the other part, it's like genealogy, it's a science, no? So for genealogy, it's taking all the resources, all the experience, all the struggle, historical struggle of the feminism in order to make enrichment to the investigation, to the debate, and to the founding of the solution and developing the woman revolution, to make like to create knowledge of the woman revolution. But like the feminism was too tight for it, no? But of course it's included in feminism. In genealogy, sorry. So genealogy is the science of the woman and of the life, in which all the women, all the movement, all the knowledge of the woman is collected and organized also together.
Okay. Thanks, Sara. I think maybe in a bit, if we have time, I will ask also for a contribution from Necibe, who's also part of the genealogy committee in Europe, and it would be good to hear their thoughts. But just to pick up a couple more questions. There's a few about the understanding of gender. Let me see. So whether there is an approach to transgender and non-binary genders within genealogy. Just an understanding, first of all. And there's also a separate question about education, about how the issue of gender is explored in their education specifically.
I answer, or Najibe will answer? I don't know.
I think if you do, maybe Najibe, we can invite in a minute, but just for now.
Okay. Yes, about the question of the woman and different gender identity. So at the beginning, so I explain now. So what we see as woman identity, it's a woman as a whole. So we don't divide the existence of the woman in the social part or the biological part or the historical part. We see the woman as a whole and as an identity that is an oppressed identity, but also identity of resistance. No? So we also take like this heritage of the role of the woman in the society from the Neolithic time, but also all the resistance of the dominant power. Another thing, it's like, but it's not meaning that all the existence in the society are denying. The only thing, it's like every time the woman, what it means woman, has been defined by someone else than like it can be a state, it can be a religion, a mythology, or a man in a family, no? And so now what we want to recover, it's like how as women we like define ourselves and who are we. And this who are we, it's not something that it's just, for example, individual, or it's not something that it's just from we take one characteristic on another, but we try to find the truth through histories, through the struggle, and through organizing like autonomously, no? Because at least the woman has been very disconnected from her home, from her nature, no? So it's what we are doing. But of course, we are not denying that like in everywhere in the world, there is diversity of like in the universe, there is a diversity. But the thing, it's like we take as a beginning, like the question of the woman's revolution that will also bring with it all the struggle of everybody and from the child until the old people, different culture, different also like gender maybe. But what it's clear, it's like we defend the woman existence.
Thank you. I think maybe we are having some difficulty with connection again with Najibe, but that was a really helpful answer. So there's another question about the position of the revolution on contraception methods and methods such as abortion and kind of reproductive rights, basically, and women, if you've got any experience to share about how those are addressed.
Yeah, so you know, like because of all the patriarchal structure, like most of the women here has been totally also disconnected to like the knowledge of their own body also, or what is the role of the mother, for example, no, in or the woman as a mother, no, in the life, in the like a family, etc. So it's a long, long process. But what it's very important, it's like there is a lot of education project, a lot of health project also. So for example, in Rojava, as a woman, they are seeing now anatomy lessons, for example, that it's something mostly new for most of the women here. Also, like, as you know, like, for example, in Jinwar, like in the women's village of Rojava, like now there is a specific like clinic just for a woman, do by woman for the woman, that it's also like working on the health question in the women's fields. And so, yeah, it's something that it's taking a lot of steps. But of course, like the first thing, it's like to recovering the knowledge of our own body as a woman, but also to organize differently the society, that also the woman will be able to make their own also decision about their own life, but also about the life of their family, the life in the society. And so it's also part of the change of the mentality, but we cannot compare like the situation, for example, in Europe or in other countries with the situation here, because the conditions are different, the society is different, also the history is different. But of course, there is a lot of work that is done in that way. And more you develop the autonomous woman health system, autonomous woman education system, and places where women also that they are facing violence, they can come out from this violence, like Jinwar, for example, come together, build a new life, another life with another model, you are making steps in order not just to like the question of the contraception, but it's much more like the, we can say like the challenge, it's much more broader than this.
Thank you, Sarah. So I'm conscious that we've hit 9 o'clock, I'm afraid, which means we probably won't have time to address any more questions. I'm just going to quickly see if Heval Nechibe would like to quickly say anything. I know that we're really out of time. Okay, maybe it's not possible.
There's somebody else in Nechibe's place. Leve?
Yeah, I can't unmute them. It's not working. Yeah, I think we're gonna have to leave it to a few too many technical problems, but hopefully not before we finish with some music. Before we do, I have a couple of announcements to make and a few things that we'll post in the chat. So yes, tomorrow our friends at Scottish Solidarity with Kurdistan are hosting one of their Kurdish Tuesdays. So they are organising a series of events that's complementary to ours, exploring some of the issues in more depth, politically and legally. And tomorrow, the event is going to be with Jeanne Furman, who led the legal team that defeated attempts by the Belgian government to prosecute 42 people and two organizations to prosecute them with terrorism based on having links to the PKK. So they will be having a conversation about this and about the ongoing criminalization of activists in Europe and also in the UK. There is also a link to the Water for Rojava crowdfunder campaign that we are about to post, and we really encourage friends to click on that and support it if you can. Great. And then finally, Ida is just bringing up the Kurdistan Solidarity Network webpage, where you can find out about the rest of the events that we have planned in this series, and you'll be able to see recordings of the previous sessions and also of this session. And you can also find contact details, where to get in touch, more about the things that we've spoken, touched on today, hopefully. So finally, I'm gonna hand over to Tanya, who is a Sorani singer, and Sorani is one of the languages spoken in Kurdistan, and she is going to play us a few songs to close and wrap things up. So Tanya, can I hand over to you?
Hello,
we can hear you.
I can't see myself, shall I?
No, you don't need, oh, fantastic, we can see you. This is great,
hello. Perfect.
Hello, yes. Tanya, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Yes, I'm gonna sing a melody for Ahmed Kaya, which the people in Bakur and Rojava, they love it. He's very famous and he's my favorite as well. But to show my love from Bashur, Iraqi part, this type of karaoke I'm using as a music for my song is, I hope it works. The music is from Bakur and the lyrics will be in Sorani, which is my dialect. So I'm gonna talk a little bit in Sorani as well. Slav slatan lebe la rojava la bakur la bashur la rojhalat is khoshavistim he rezm he hamuman la bashur yoma khoshave wa bam gorania bajdariya kam la galfana bjijin. Holding this seminar.
Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us, Tanya. It was really great to finish with some music, people are saying in the chat. So thank you, friends, once again. We'll be doing this again next week. And yes, please do join us. Thank you so much, Sarah, as well, for joining us, and Baravan.